Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. In this episode, I'm doing something a little different. I'm about to leave for a much-needed vacation. And instead of having a long lapse between podcast episodes, I decided to share a podcast episode that I was a guest on. And I'll be back in late July with some awesome guests. I can't wait to talk to them and share that conversation with you. Every podcaster has their own favorite podcast. I certainly have mine, some voice-related, others around other general topics of interest. And a fun way to share a podcast one is passionate about is to have another podcast be the guest podcast in your own podcast. I did this last year with Carl Robinson, who hosts the amazing Voice Tech podcast. I interviewed Carl for the Bixby Developer Chat to talk about his revolutionary Rumble Studio tool. And later on, Carl used that episode as an episode on his own Voice Tech podcast. So with that idea in mind, I'm going to share an interview I did for another podcast. One of my favorite podcasts is Two Voice Devs, hosted by my friends Alan Furstenberg and Mark Tucker. Two Voice Devs is an awesome podcast for the voice world. Alan and Mark talk about developing for voice, what's working, what isn't working, and what their hopes are for the future, and what they'd really love to be able to develop. Every once in a while, they have a guest, and I was honored to be their guest a few weeks ago. I talked about what I do for Samsung and Bixby and how Bixby development is different. We also talked about cross-platform voice development and discussed the Open Voice Network, an organization that I am proudly a member of. Without further ado, here is Mark Tucker interviewing me for the Two Voice Devs podcast.
Hello, I'm Mark Tucker.
And I'm Roger Kibbe.
And we are Two Voice Devs. Hey, way to go, Roger. Just let everybody know, we got a guest here. Alan is out just for this week, so nothing's happened to him. He's just off doing some other things, and we've got an old friend of mine. Roger, why don't you go ahead and just do a brief introduction, like who you are and like when we met.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about when we met. I believe it was in January 2018. At what was the Alexa conference, now Project Voice. And I think there was about 100 of us in the Chattanooga Public Library there. So you can see that was kind of, you know, even though that was that long ago, it was kind of the early days of voice.
Oh, and I remember it was cold. So we still like were wearing our jackets.
Yeah, it was this California boy was definitely cold going there in the snow in January. I'm not used to that stuff. But we met and immediately hit it off. And, you know, one of the things that I loved about voice is it's such a friendly, great community. But yeah, give a brief background on myself. Long career in technology and consulting and e-commerce architect and technology strategy and omnichannel. But in 2017, you know, I got this big bug about I'm going to go back and join the startup. And I said, you know, voice was something I'd been playing with, and I just saw this enormous potential there. And so left what I call my cozy corporate IT job and said, I'm going to start a voice startup. And our whole idea was this idea of WordPress for voice, make it super easy to develop a voice. So worked in that for about 15 months. You know, ideas are cheap, execution is hard. And we were full of ideas and execution. Me and two part-time co-founders wasn't fully executing where we needed to be. And, you know, I got a family, I got two teenage daughters. I could have put, you know, food in their plates and a house over their head. And so I started doing some voice consulting work, and I entered this hackathon for Samsung Bixby before it had even been released. And so I went, entered the hackathon and actually won it. And that's when I met people like kind of the legendary Adam Chire, who founded Viv, who founded Siri, went and worked for Apple for a couple of years when Siri was purchased, left and founded Viv Labs. And then Samsung acquired Viv. And so then I went to work for Viv Labs and directly for Adam. And, you know, I'm a developer evangelist. So what does that mean? You know, I go out, I talk to people like you and Alan about, hey, let's talk about conversational AI. Let's talk about voice. And let me tell you how you can do some things with Bixby. and really a conversation about development and how to do it and ideas and thoughts there. So I'm very externally focused there. So I do that. I do manage most of it. If you see Bixby developers on social media, you can blame me because I manage most of our social media, Twitter and Facebook, and collaborate on YouTube. And then I am the host of the podcast myself, the Bixby Developers Chat. And indeed, Mark, you've been a guest.
Yeah.
So has Alan. And I try to find interesting people in the voice industry to go and talk and have a conversation about what's happening. It's not specific to Bixby. It's really about, I think this person is interesting and cool. I think they'd be cool for people to hear from. I'd love to talk to them. Let's record our conversation. So that's the way I look at it. But so that's brief introduction to myself.
Yeah, so we had met in Chattanooga, and then we had kind of reconnected later, pre-COVID, at Voice Summit in New Jersey. And you were running a hackathon there for Bixby. And I'm like, what are you doing? What's going on over here? And you were talking to me about being a Bixby Premier developer. And so I'm like, hey, I haven't done anything with Bixby yet. And that's kind of where we reconnected and how I got involved with Bixby development, thanks to you and those that were on your team that were able to answer lots of questions and get moving. And I was able to quickly put out 3 or 4 capsules. And so that's how we've reconnected. And today we're going to talk a little bit about Bixby. So Roger, why don't you just tell us about what's kind of the current state of Bixby development? And we can just kind of spend a few minutes talking about that.
Yeah. So when you're developing for Bixby, Mark, you mentioned a capsule. So the equivalent of a skill or an action, maybe sometime the industry will standardize on terminology. If we have time, we might talk about Open Voice Network, another thing I'm involved with that is looking for to standardize a lot more than just terminology. But yeah, so when you're building for Bixby, you're building for Samsung devices. So you're building for Samsung phones, you can build for Samsung smartwatches, you can build for Samsung appliances in particular, if you've seen that smart refrigerator with the giant screen, and then Samsung TVs. And then there's an end user marketplace for all those, except not quite TVs. And hint, hint, there's another device coming pretty soon, but I can't talk about that. But a little breaking news or fun thing there for you. So you're building for those. It is pretty darn different. So I started, as I did, building for Alexa, a little bit, one moderately successful skill in a bunch that nobody ever uses. And then did a little bit with Google. And then when I joined Viv Labs, I then started obviously doing Bixby development. Really different, really model-driven and declarative, right? So you do a bunch of modeling and very little traditional coding, and quite different, for instance, than Alexa. Where I'd say Alexa is mostly imperative. You do a fair amount of coding, right? You do your Lambda, right? There's a bunch of boilerplate code you got to write in there, and you have your business logic. Although you model your NL training in Alexa, and then Google's somewhere between the middle of the two. But yeah, to give it an example, so we had a little webinar, and I took the Pet Match skill, kind of pretty well known, open source Alexa thing. And I ported it over to Bixby, and I think in Alexa it was something like 450 lines of Node.js code. And when I ported it over to Bixby, it was something like 35 lines of actual JavaScript code. Why is that? Because all that logic was really replaced by modeling. So it's really a different paradigm shift.
Yeah, it is.
And I got to tell you, I grew up, developing, early Java development, I've done a lot of imperative developing in my career. So when I went over to Bixby, I was like, oh, this is crazy. Like, I don't know how this thing's all working and all this stuff is working together. And
what's my job as a developer now?
Yeah, kind of glues together. Yeah, no. I mean, there's all this modeling involved. And so, and some people get it in a day and some people struggle. And I'll be the first to admit, I struggle. Now I get it, right? I'm immersed into it and it seems much easier to me. But it definitely is a different development paradigm. So the closest analogy I can think of is if you've done both React and Angular programming, Angular is pretty imperative. There's a fair amount of code that you need to write. You move to React and some magic just kind of happens, right?
Kind
of tell this component what to do and it just does it. That's a little bit, very different, but it's that kind of paradigm, kind of Teutonic kind of plate shift as a developer you got to go through to move over to Bixby development.
Yeah, so it is definitely interesting. I know when I first started, first of all, there is a development studio that actually syncs with the cloud. And as you're deploying as you're developing things, and even before you deploy. And so that was different immediately. And then you start off, you create these models and you call them, you know, concepts or structures or, you know, but you start by figuring out this is the data that's going to be talked about. And then you start, you know, creating actions around those. And in some cases, you can execute JavaScript code locally, or you can make remote like API calls to get to your data. And it is quite a bit different. And then as you're doing your language model, it's also interesting because you've got a lot more dials, a lot more things that you can do. I never quite felt like I grasped all of the things that you could do with translations, that I was only using a part of what the full capability was.
Yeah. Yeah. You did point out another big difference, right? You use the Bixby Developer Studio. It's an all-in-one IDE. Right, you do your modeling, your coding, there's a simulator there, there's a debugger in there. And then it just syncs to that. You don't have to create a separate cloud account, right? If I can't keep up with everything happening Alexa-wise, but I assume you still need to go, you still need to create your AWS account, typically host a Lambda there. I'm all saying this is the typical stuff. There's right. Lots of ways to doing Alexa development, and then you need to sync. Well, all that stuff is happening for you, but behind the scenes, right? So you write some code, and it syncs up to the cloud, and you can jump over to the simulator and go do that. And, you know, that has its pros and cons. You know, I'm so used to it. I went to go do some, you know, I still do a little bit of development in other platforms, and I have an Alexa skill I need to update. And I was like, wow, like I have to sync this stuff and keep it going and things. And it was something that was second nature when I did it. And now the Bixby way, right, don't worry about it, is done for you. So that, you know, that's a big difference. You know, the other big difference is it's inherently multimodal. So there is no voice-only experience. As a matter of fact, if you created a voice-only experience, it'd fail. We have a certification process, much like Alexa has and Google has. It would fail, right? So you actually have to create a UI and allow the user to input the UI. And when I say input, it is actually, I mean, there's buttons and sliders and checkboxes. I mean, it's almost like you can create a kind of, I'll call it a web-ish UI. So pretty different on that input side. And then the output, I mean, all of the voice platforms have a good way to, you know, create some UI visually in the output. And we've seen lots of advances in industry in the last couple of years there. And it's more and more multimodal is there. But yeah, you definitely are building a multimodal application. And I always say multimodal is harder than voice only.
Yeah, there definitely is more to think about with that. But you also don't need to, I guess, you don't need to worry about per se the fact that, am I going to write this for the, you know, the phone or for the fridge or for the TV or for the watch? You use the same, you know, constructs and you know, it applies some of that across the different devices.
Yeah. So the language, it's called Bixby Views, right? Yep. Our own markup for UI, right? And one of the nice things about it is kind of, you know, write once, deploy anywhere. It actually works pretty darn well. I mean, certainly the phone and the appliance is really the appliance is a giant tablet.
Yep.
And things, right? So it's just building. And so the UI works for it. The watch is an interesting paradigm and an interesting right. place to do development. It works. But you're probably, that's the place you're going to need to tweak and think about it, right? Because there's a very limited, you know, an inch screen there. I actually find developing for the watch probably the most interesting and challenging and probably the place where I'd argue the industry has spent the least amount of time thinking about, you know, so I know there's Google Wear OS, right? Which is a little checkered history of Google Assistant and Wear OS, as I understand. But, I mean, you can develop for it. I think that's a really interesting place to develop voice apps. I don't think that we've spent as an industry a lot of time or thinking about how or what to do there. I will tell you, if you're going to develop for there, because I can see, we see the usage of watches, people want quick in and out. They do not engage in multi-turn voice interactions with the watch. They right. want to ask it one thing and get it, or maybe two things and get it. So quick in and out. So if you're going to build something for that small screen for watch on mobile, on the go, think quick Q&A, very simple in and out, you know,
Shorter phrases, game. Yeah. So even your text-to-speech is probably going to be different on those.
Yeah, I mean, like a simple game. I'm thinking like question of the day would probably work pretty well on the watch, right? It's a really beautiful content in a simple game, right? But multi-turn kind of things. I'm just saying what I've seen from, we have a lot of data on user behavior. Mm-hmm. They don't, people don't do it.
Yep. Well, it's interesting. So I started doing Bixby stuff, but since I've been doing Jovo for quite a bit of years, then it was interesting. The approach that the Bixby plugin took for Jovo was actually to model, I could use quite a bit of the same backend code that's, you know, hosted in Lambda, but really it, as you're creating actions, you're actually creating them remotely and you're doing it in a certain fashion, which then basically turns each of those into an intent. So each action then maps to an intent. So then that actually gets, you know, mapped to your intent handler in your code. And that actually worked out pretty good. It's you know, not exactly how Bixby was designed. But if you're doing something cross-platform, it actually worked fairly well on a number of different projects I did to be able to use Jovo and do cross-platform. Do you see much of that?
Yeah, I've seen Jovo less with Bixby than I might expect. Although, quite frankly, when we were doing this big hackathon, me and everyone else was on the review team because there was so much coming in. It was just insane. So I don't see a lot of the incoming stuff now. So I don't know how much Jovo is there or not. I'm a huge fan of Jovo. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that I'm a fan. I give them money every month. I love what Jan and team are doing. And yet I haven't done as much with Jovo as I want. I love the idea of cross-platform development. I mean, I think one of the big industry challenges is these different platforms that are pretty darn different how they work. And so you get something like Jovo that kind of puts it together and makes it easier. You know, I always like to think, web developer for way too long. So I always try to equate, you know, this to web development. I don't know, maybe Jovo is some, and this is said the right way because it's where it is. Maybe it's the jQuery. Because jQuery was amazing when it came out. It's like, oh my gosh, I have all these different browsers and I can code once to all of them and a bunch of boilerplate stuff that I have to take care of is done for me. And maybe that's where we are. Not a perfect analogy, but I just try to think of, you know, kind of steps along the path, right? And I love what the Jovo guys are doing, kind of solving a big industry challenge, you know, and likewise, the Voiceflow guys are solving somewhat the same challenge, but I'm going to make this super accessible to non-developers. Although I'd argue building a complicated Voiceflow application is really development. Although maybe they don't say that because, you know, there's conditionals in there and everything there. Maybe it's a friendly UI, but that's definitely development, right? Development is all kinds of things, right? From, you know, writing assembly to writing, you know, Excel macros. That's all development and everything in between. But anyway, I'm a big fan of the cross. I think it's good for the industry.
Yeah, I think so too.
Cross-platform tooling like Jovo.
Yeah, so the most recent thing that I've built is Snatch Word, and it's a game that I originally planned on releasing for Alexa and Google and Bixby. In fact, most of the code's there, and the idea is that it's a massive multiplayer online game, so you can play in real time against players from around the world and on different devices, and that shows up on your leaderboard. So as you show up on the leaderboard, you're identified as playing on an Alexa device from the UK or something like that. But I did run into some issues on Bixby and then unfortunately, hit with lots of stuff at work that I haven't had the time to really work on that this year, but would still like to get back to that. I still like the idea of being the first game that works where you can play against the three major platforms at the same time. So we'll see if I can get back to that.
Awesome. I'd love to. You mean your day job got in the way of your nighttime hobbies?
Oh, man. But you know what? My day job is the stuff I really like to do. So I don't know. You really can't complain.
I love my day job too and things, but I also like to, you know, I spend my day job working with Bixby, but I, you know, my nighttime passion, I really love voice and conversational AI. And the latest thing I've been playing with a little bit is Raza, which is really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Super cool stuff. I'm literally on Raza 1 kind of right now. So, but they have some kind of rethinking some things about particularly modeling conversations and things that I think is really cool. So I can get all excited and wave my hands and jump up and down over this industry because I think we're so nascent and so early, and there's so much more. There's so much to be built, right?
Yes,
we're just building the simplest possible stuff.
Yeah, I'm really, you know, excited about what we can do, always wanting to have a little bit more functionality, a little bit more things that I can do to keep pushing the envelope and making experiences. But overall, I don't know, maybe you found this too. I've really found the voice industry to be very, very friendly, so much more friendly than I have other places in tech over the years. I don't know, what's your experience?
I very much agree, right? You know, and I don't know, maybe because it's a new industry and there's a rising tide for all, and maybe it's the people who are attracted to it. I don't know what the magic sauce is there. But yeah, I mean, there's clearly some competition going on, but it feels like everyone knows everyone,
yeah.
Right? So I definitely know my counterparts on the Alexa side pretty darn well. The Google developer advocates are a little bit more, not quite as public, so I don't know them quite as well, but I've met them and talked to them, and they're all smart and sharp, and I love talking to them. And so there does feel in this industry, there's this sense of cooperation. I think we're all so excited about what could be and so kind of challenged about what is that we like to get together and kind of commiserate about, this doesn't work. And, oh man, can you imagine if?
Yeah.
And so I think that's what, you know, just the grand opportunity in front of us makes it that really collegial kind of environment. So yeah, I love talking to people from anybody and everybody in this industry. It's a great and fun industry.
Yeah, no, it has been. I can even still picture that first conference that we were at. I can picture the library. I can also picture the party they had one night at the bar. It was like a guitar museum or something like that.
Oh, yes.
And they had like a spread, I think, of different types of nuggets and dipping sauces maybe. But I remember even like what position on the bar that we like pulled over a chair and just kind of like, hey, you know, let's talk and get to know each other a little bit better. And you're telling me about California and the things that you were doing. And so, I don't know. I've counted you as a friend from the very start. So I just.
Absolutely. Really absolutely. Yeah. I love talking to you anytime, Mark. You know, COVID's ending. So we got to go back. My colleagues think I'm nuts. There is nothing I like more than going to a conference. Because I'll tell you, here's what happens to me in a conference, right? So you know, I get the booth duty and that's fine. And then I try to go out and I try to go to like some of the talks.
Yep.
And 9 times out of 10, I don't make the talk because I meet someone in the hallway.
And
I'm like,
talking.
Hey, oh my gosh, well, I only know you from your Twitter handle, yeah. Right? And then we sat down and we talk and things like that. And I just have a grand time talking and meeting with people. And I get all... I'm like the Energizer Bunny at a conference. So I'm super excited for things to open up and get back to normal because my favorite place to be, at least professionally, is at a conference and meeting people and talking to them and getting to know them and, you know, thinking about the grand cool stuff we could be building.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, we wanted to touch a little bit on Open Voice Network. I, you know, joined on early on, like there was a meeting at a Project Voice Conference where a lot of us got together and kind of kicked it off with John, and you've continued that. And so why don't you talk a little bit about what's new with Open Voice Network?
Yeah. Oh, so briefly, if people don't know, Open Voice Network is so started by John Stein, who I've known John for almost 20 years. So back to our e-commerce days. So anyway, he sat there and said, hey, as we've been talking, there's all these different platforms doing different things, and we don't have industry standards. And so this is a group that getting together and saying, hey, we're going to start talking about some industry standards or some industry guidelines to help advance the industry forward. And he's gotten some pretty big name retailers up front to sign on and help drive this. Matter of fact, a big announcement today is the Linux. It's been kind of part of the Linux Foundation, but not publicly. And so today the Linux Foundation said, hey, Open Voice Network is an official thing. And there's
All
a big
right.
announcement today. So that's good. So there are three things that Open Voice Network is working on. One, security and privacy. I mean, kind of a no-brainer. And, you know, how do you get, you know, I like how John, he talks all about user trust. So what can we do as an industry to get users to trust using voice assistants, conversational AI, right? We've all read articles and, oh my gosh, this thing records me. And, you know, I think it's a hump in the industry to get past that kind of privacy concerns to go do that. And I feel like we're kind of maybe bumping into that right now there. So anyway, lots to talk about that. There are some standards and some thinking, some thoughts around not only technology, but of how to communicate what happens, you know, in kind of non-technical ways. So the layman understands what happens with voice technology well enough they feel comfortable with their data. And then the other thing is all about interoperability, you know. So that's like our friends, you know, Jovo, we were just talking about a great tool for interoperability, but how do we, you know, take this mass of all these different platforms and start thinking about, well, how can we build something interoperable and still let the platforms innovate among themselves? I mean, you know, I'll be frank, Mark, taking my, you know, who I work for hat off completely. The reason the web won is because of interoperability, right? And, you know, and I remember the browser wars. That wasn't always true, man. I remember fighting with IE bad, IE 6 I have gray hair from IE 6. Anyway.
Just one.
Yeah. Lots of them, actually. But then it became, and now today, I can build a really great web application that will work on any browser. And so we've done a lot. So thinking about how to bring that to the voice industry and how to work with the big players, the big platform providers, to advocate for that and bring that forward. And then the last thing is really about a voice registry. Think of like DNS for voice. So, you know, you go and you have to give your invocation name, you got to register Alexa. It's a different process than go, you built your Alexa skill or your Bixby capsule, or, you know, and saying, hey, let's create this DNS-like functionality where you can go register this one and have it available. That's the one that I'm pretty deeply involved in. Pretty interesting. I mean, it sounds simple. It is simple, and yet it's not. Because you start thinking about, okay, if there's two voice, I call them voice experiences, voice apps. Brand neutral name for, I don't know, let's say Bob's Donuts. Well, there could be 10 Bob's Donuts across the country.
Oh, yeah.
When I ask for Bob's Donuts, who am I? I'm probably asking for the local Bob's Donuts, not the Bob's Donuts in Louisiana. So how do I figure that out or give enough information to the voice assistant platform to figure that out? You know, sounds like all these different things. Anyway, pretty deeply involved with that. We're just at the stage where we've done enough darn talking, you know, enough analysis and really starting to build out some prototypes and ideas to be something pretty open and standard that either the individual voice platforms would go and take and use as an open standard, or maybe it ends up in something, if you think about the web, right? That there's a whole domain registry and you go through this process and it's a third party who handles that. Exactly how that fits to be determined. But the conceptual idea of being able to manage your voice presence name a single place and not have to race around the platforms and one person gets it, another person doesn't, I think has a lot of legs. So I go on and on about that, but it's an interesting thing to work on.
Yeah, no, I definitely like the idea of a voice registry. And we just need to make sure we do it in a way that users are in control or are fully informed. I know that there are a number of early starters out in the voice industry that they're were wanting to make voice experiences for customers. And as a way to do that, they've created kind of like a marketing tool where they say, hey, you need to come in and lock in your domain name before somebody takes it. And, you know, trying to use some of the same terminology as what the domain registry is on the web. But really, it doesn't apply. In some cases, I feel like borders on being unethical. So having a voice registry that provides value, but in such a way that people are fully informed that in some cases you can verify our website and your Google action would in essence be verified and protected. Whereas on Alexa, you can have multiple things have the same same invocation name and that you don't really, the only thing that protects you there is if you've got the trademark for it. Mm-hmm. So there is still a lot of confusion and some people I think are adding to the confusion, but I really like the idea of a voice registry that hopefully will put some more power into the hands of people and make sure that they're understanding what's going on.
Yeah, something standard that works. You're right. I mean, I've seen those too, what you're talking about, Mark. And, you know, I feel like they're, quite frankly, taking advantage of people who don't quite understand what's happening.
Right.
Different. You gave the great example. Alexa allows duplicate invocation names. Neither Google nor Bixby currently do. I think at some point you're going to have to allow my example of Bob's Donuts.
Yep.
But you're going to have to be smart about how you're going to allow them and not create this great kind of rush to, you know, people have run up. There's definitely, you know, you hear the domain name squatting. There's definitely voice squatting going on, right? Where people are just have these kind of crap, you know, fact-based things that are sitting there. I would hope we could avoid some of that. And yet human nature is to go and try to, you know, outsmart the person next to them. But, you know, anyway, fun stuff to work on. And I think we've done right, which is hard.
Yep.
It'll be good for the industry.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Roger, for being on Two Voice Devs. Would love to have you back again sometime. Yep, Two Voice Devs. And for those that are watching or listening, we just hope you're enjoying what you're learning. And also, we invite you to ask questions or to get involved, because you're just as important as anyone else in this industry. If you've got a desire to make a difference and contribute, we're happy to accept that contribution. So
awesome.
Thank you very much. And we'll talk to you later. Have a great week, Roger.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, everyone. I'll just say last thing. I always try to say start of the conversation, not the end. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kibbe. And I'd love to keep on talking about, yes, I'd love to talk about building for Bixby. But as you saw, I'm also passionate about the whole industry. Talk about Open Voice Network. Just talk about your crazy, wacky idea that you're building for voice, because crazy, wacky ideas are where great ideas come from.
Exactly. All right. Thank you again.
Thanks.
So that's my conversation with Mark Tucker on the Two Voice Devs podcast. If you're not subscribed to the Two Voice Devs podcast, you should be. I want to thank Mark and Alan Furstenberg for having me on as a guest, and the Bixby Developer Chat in the standard format of me interviewing guests will return in about a month or so. I have lined up some really cool industry leaders who I know you'll love hearing from. And that's all. This is Roger Kibbe from the Bixby Developer Chat podcast signing off.